Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Line this up, make it roll, and he should make it.
It's okay.
Right down to the wire. Who predicted that by one?
Matsuyama is Japan's first Masters champion.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Hideki Matsuyama, baby. He kind of wiped the whole course with the entire field there, but for 5 minutes. The entire day belonged to him. It wasn't nearly the drama at Augusta that we had hoped and signed up for. Welcome back. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here. Good to have you aboard. Matt has just been testing out his ability to share with us the Top Shot graphic that he'll be looking at. We'll be able to see it on our Zoom meeting. Someone says, Damon, are you aware of the sarcasm in your voice during the latest Top Shot tease? Yeah, we're aware of all the sarcasm on the show. I don't think we could have the show without sarcasm. But
can
here's
you
the
have
thing.
Sarcasm if you're not aware of it? Is it sarcasm anymore?
Thank you very much. One must be self-aware for it to be. But I am sarcastically interested in it. I just saw it. I still don't understand it. I'm sure at the end of this, I won't be understanding it either. But let's roll. I mean, we're going to do it today at 4:45. Kolsky is going to open a Top Shot pack of cards on the air, and all the fun and merriment that comes with it will ensue at 4:45 today. We're about 12 minutes away from talking some baseball with Alex Pavlovich. That's Giants baseball coming up with him in just a little bit here. But, I know that, you know, we all checked the box of, yes, give me a dramatic Sunday at Augusta. Were you a little bit let down by that Sunday turn? It really, outside of what, you know, Matsuyama goes bogey on 12, 15, and 16, which opened the door for Xavier Schlafly, who was, you know,
Xander,
thank you very much. Xander, not Xavier. Xander Schlafly, who was, what, two back, and it looked like Hideki was leaking, and all he needed was a good tee shot on 16, and whoop, Masters on. But no, didn't happen. He put it in the drink, too, and all the drama kind of evaporated right there.
I mean, I don't know what I expected after Matsuyama blew up, but I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in the field either, because nobody in that group was really sort of, you know, battle tested at that high a level. So I kind of thought something would happen. I didn't know it was going to be that quick or that that exactly like Matsuyama's blow up. But I never got the sense that, uh-oh, this is going to be bad, because it turned out sort of not to be. And it wasn't a very interesting Masters anyway, except that it was being held in April again. So by and large, I think it's a fairly forgettable one, unless you're either an Asian golfer, someone who follows Asian golf, or you who just likes Hideki Matsuyama because he was the best player for the entire tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those interesting sports situations where the event itself is a bit of a dud, but the sort of thing that happened at the event is a big deal, right? I mean, that it was not a good Sunday for the couch, but it's a Sunday for the history books. And that brings its own sort of interest.
By the way, that almost sounded like Jim Nance wrote that for you. That was perfect right there. Not
you.
A Sunday for the couch,
I
but
am
for the
available,
history books.
You know? Hello, friends.
Hello. Jim, he even got a, as he was butler cabining the entire event, he even got, from the land of the rising sun, a new sun shines on the Masters. Like, I mean, he really nanced it up there. It was good stuff.
He nanced it up.
But I'm telling you, the one moment of the weight of the tournament being put on Schlafly's shoulders was the moment. I mean, it really, really was. Here it is. Do you want back in an opportunity to maybe win the Masters? And he said, yeah, I would like that, but I'm also going to put it in the water right here to tell you that it got to me. And it did get to him in that one moment. And it was his first triple bogey, I believe I've heard, in 1,000 holes. Like, that's the weight of a moment falling down on a player. You have your first triple bogey in 1,000 holes when the door for you to climb back into a Masters just was cracked open, and then boom, it was gone. Even the Billy Horschel anger club drama rattle, like, even that lacked the drama that it was being sold with, because as far as on-court anger club smashing blowups go, even that one was tame. He just threw his putter in his bag and like bounced it off of its grip like 3 or 4 times. That was it.
Yeah. I think there might have been drama if Matsuyama had come back in the next hole and blown up too. But he sort of like gathered himself like right away. He says, well, that was bad, but I'm still up by 2. And he behaved like a guy who'd been doing this for a while and was up by 2.
If Schlafly had put one right next to the hole, I think then all of a sudden we got a tournament. Like, oh, game on. All of a sudden we are playing golf on Sunday. But it didn't quite happen. It wasn't as dramatic as we wanted it to be. But still, Ray, you were right. It was April at Augusta, and it was beautiful. That course is the sexiest sports get in HD. It's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous out there.
I don't need radio towers to enjoy the beauty of Augusta. That's just me.
You're a grungy old traditionalist, you are.
You know what I am? I'm easy to please. That's me.
Well, that's fair to say.
Some rolling fairways, you know, a couple tough greens, amen corner, I'm good to go.
Undulation.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of there wasn't a lot of that secondary optic that makes it the Masters, where you got crowds lining each hole and, you know, backdrops with the TV tower. It didn't look like, you know, a Sunday at a Muni, but it did not look like Augusta National either, because it was wide open. And unless you played on a Tuesday afternoon in June, you don't get that view. And most people only get to see those 4 days in April when it's crowded all the time. So there was that too.
Pretty good stuff. Pretty, pretty good stuff. Even though it wasn't as good as it can be. Wasn't that, oh my God, what a pressure cooker. The back nine, excuse me, the second nine at Augusta. Oh my God. It wasn't quite what we hoped it would be. Matt, I see you tinkering now with our Zoom meeting. How is this Top Shot opening party going to go off?
It's going to go great. We're ready to go. I got my screen share set up. So 4:45, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hit it, and it's going to be great.
I'm very excited. Very, very excited. If you're a Giants fan, I want you to be excited, because we're about to have Alex Pavlovich on from NBC Sports Bay Area. Obviously, the Giants just swept the Rockies. They've won 5 of their last 6 games. Evan Longoria is basically leading this team in every offensive category right now. The starting pitching has been better than advertised so far in this young season. The 2.70 ERA is the second best staff ERA in all of Major League Baseball. The bullpen right now, I mean, it's early, but the bullpen looks like it has more answers than it does questions early on in the year, and that feels like a good place to be starting a year of a lot of questions from. Tonight's game number 10, but cautious optimism doesn't sound like the worst investment a Giant fan could be making in this season right now. Ray, would you be bullish on recommending a little bit of cautious optimism to a Giant fan?
Much more caution than optimism. I want to see them start facing some of the teams like Cincinnati that can make a big dent in your ERA. I hate to bring out small sample size, but if they had faced a full complement of the Padres and two teams that hit the ball better than Seattle and Colorado, I'd say this is going to be funky pitching like 2010, but it's going to be really effective. If they can navigate this team, and then when they play the Dodgers, if they can navigate them, then you've got the makings of 2010. Right now you've got the makings of, I don't know. So,
well, you got
getting
the makings
caution,
of
you're not getting optimism.
You got the makings of a team that's much better than any of us thought it would be through nine games. You know, I mean, that's not nothing. Ray's certainly right that we can't overreact to a small sample, but in a way, that means Cincinnati's coming to town at the perfect time, right? Is Aaron Sanchez, you know, you looked awfully good last week. Let's see what you got against a team that's hitting the cover off the ball. And then it's back to the top of the rotation. And again, guys who have basically dominated to this point, how do you look when you face one of the best hitting teams in the sport? And if they continue to look good, that's more data points to the good. So, there's no reason not to be excited if you're a Giants fan. You know,
I mean, if we're,
is
if
it
we're,
small sample? Yes, but it's a better sample than you thought you'd get over any nine-game stretch this season.
Absolutely. When you look at one of the first games of the year, the first game of the year, where they wasted that really good start by Gausman, you take that game away and look at where this team is right now. I mean, had they not coughed it up in the bullpen? So there are reasons to push and pull your optimism, your apprehension as far as this season goes. And I know that there are a lot of people that no matter what the San Francisco Giants do, the only way that they approach it is simply, well, what good does any of this get you? Who on this team is here 2 to 3 years from now? How many of these guys are part of the solution 2 to 3 years from now? And you know what the answer to that is? I don't know. Probably not many. And ultimately, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't. I cannot worry about the 2024 San Francisco Giants when the 2021 San Francisco Giants are nine games into their season. We can only deal with these kind of one at a time. And they're in this weird place where if you got a GM who just wants to play a whole bunch of go fish with, let's see if this guy works out, it's for a team like this, and it seems like Farhan's the right guy for it.
Here's what I think you want, right? If you're that guy, you want Brandon Belt to continue to struggle. Because ultimately, cut is the fastest way. Brandon Belt's out of here. And there's a spot for Joey Bart. I think you want some struggles in the outfield to continue because there's maybe a spot for Elio Ramos. That's how you start to see the future. Until then, you might as well enjoy the wins.
No doubt. Alex Pavlovich probably enjoying how this has started this year because who would have thought it would start this well? It has. Now here comes a real challenge in the Cincinnati Reds. And to talk about all of it again, Alex Pavlovich here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Pavs, thanks so much, pal. How you doing?
I'm good. I think you guys brought me in right as I heard the words cut Brandon Bell. So I feel like this is a Giants season again.
Right? Well, we were just saying, like, you know, a lot of people approach this as if the only thing that matters is what the Giants look like 2 or 3 years from now. And I get it. Everyone likes projections and who will matter 2 or 3 years from now. But that's really not an answer that we're going to come up with nine games into this year. The only thing that matters is how you playing with who you got right now. And the answer is pretty well and better than expected. And that's a good start for the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they've been trying to do this. They're kind of walking a tightrope where they're rebuilding, but at the same time trying to be competitive. And so you do have guys like Belt, who had a great year last year and had a good game yesterday. And you know, they'll deal with these guys at the end of the year. A lot of them are free agents, and they'll figure out where they stand. But I think for now, they really do want to be competitive. It's not just like, you know, advertising speak out there or something. They're trying to put a good product out there while also being flexible for the future and making sure that when Ramos is ready and Bart is ready, that those guys can come up here. But it's a pretty good roster they put together. It's a roster that makes sense, I think. I mean, there are some issues that they're going to run into over the course of the year. And I think, you know, right now they're extremely healthy, which has helped. But April was pretty easy. May is a little easy too. So that they needed to get off to a start like this. And I think more than anything, just to bring some excitement back to a fan base that really hasn't seen them above 500 for a long time.
If you had to project right now, who will be the more pleasant surprise, for lack of a better phrase, would it be Jake McGee or Anthony DeSclafani?
I think I would say Jake McGee. I mean, DeSclafani, you could see this coming a little bit. They've done this. They did it with Drew Smiley. They did it with Kevin Gausman. He's a guy who was pretty good a couple of years ago. He has good stuff. He still had good stuff last year. And, you know, one thing people didn't realize about him in last year was a really rough year for him. He had his first kid in August, which, like, in the middle of the pandemic, you're in a weird spot anyway. And then you're out of the rotation for a few days because you're there for the birth of your son. And it was just a really weird 60-game season for him. And the Giants felt it was better. So I you know, you could have totally pictured what he's doing right now. I think that was really predictable. McGee was the guy who was a free agent into February, well into February. And, you know, a year ago at this time, even less than that, was released by the Rockies. And we just saw their bullpen. So they really had no faith in him. He went to Los Angeles and pitched well. And still, a lot of people, I think, did in that state. So for him to come out and basically only throw fastballs for six games and not give up a hit and have four saves and a win, that's a pretty big story.
Looking at the early success of a team that's not hitting the baseball, who is the guy that you think, of all these sort of 220 and below hitters, and there are a lot of them, who's the guy that you have the most faith in to come out of it and provide something at the plate?
I think it's got to be Yastrzemski. I mean, I looked it up today. He has 14 strikeouts and like 32 at-bats, which is, you know, just completely unlike him and has looked like he's been lost at the plate. And I think getting hit at the end of the spring was a big deal, and maybe he's not letting on. But it was something where he, you know, that's that injury that knocks guys out. If you fracture right there, it knocks you out for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. So he was very close to having something bad happen. And, you know, he did miss one game because of it. And so I think that tells you that it's still bothering him. And they have him out today. They wanted to give him a rest day. But that is the guy. I mean, that's their best hitter. That's their best player last year. And so far he's given them absolutely nothing for the most part. And
yeah, two strikes last year. The guy turned into Mike Trout with two strikes on him. And now he's just a machine up there.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, if there's a reason to be excited right now, beyond their start, it's the fact that they haven't really hit and they haven't gotten anything from Yastrzemski. They haven't gotten much from Belt or Dickerson. So, you know, they should be a lot better at the plate than they've been the first nine games.
Speaking of the guy who does hit right now, it's Evan Longoria. Like, he's reminding everyone, like, hey, I know I had a down year or two, but I used to be a bona fide, absolute card carrying stud in this sport. And I can still show you what that meant. I mean, it's been a while since the Giants have had a face of the franchise guy, but Evan Longoria was that for the Tampa Bay Rays, and all of a sudden he is putting together his best start in a real long time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, defensively it's such a huge difference. Just think back to the first 2 weeks last year when they didn't have Longoria, Crawford, and Belt in there every single game, and really the first few days when they had Flores and Solano at third base. It's such a huge difference to have Longoria in there. And you know, what he's doing with the bat is just the cherry on top, the three home runs early on. But he did this all spring. I mean, he was basically out of the lineup most of the spring because he's dealing with the foot. But every time he was in there, he homered or he doubled. So he came into camp locked in, and he's carried that over.
Can we start to make some assessments about the way Gabe Kapler handles his bullpen? I mean, and I realize nine games doesn't really do that, but their bullpen really wasn't horrible last year either. Is he better at handling a pitching staff than we thought he was?
He might be. I mean, my favorite stat from last season is that, you know, after the little Trevor got four-game stretch there and through the end of the season, they had the lowest bullpen ERA in the big league. So they did a really nice job for about a month, 5 weeks last year, and with guys that people really haven't heard of. So I think, you know, the other good stat from last year is that the Phillies bullpen was even worse after they let him go for not knowing how to handle a bullpen in part. So maybe got a bad rap in Philadelphia for that part of the game. I think for the most part, I mean, there were a few times early last year where I thought he removed starters too soon, and and that stood out to me. When he sent Gott back out in Anaheim, certainly that's something he probably regrets. But for the most part, I think, you know, we've seen 70-ish games here. I think he's done a pretty nice job of making those decisions. And it's a group decision. I mean, it's him with Kai Correa and Andrew Bailey and those guys sitting there in the dugout. I think more often than not, they pick the right matchup.
How long do, say, Brandon Belt and some of the outfielders have to underperform before the Giants decide that Joey Bart and or Elio Ramos might actually help them more today?
Past the trade deadline, I think. I mean,
oh wow,
look,
okay.
Joey, first of all, Joey's a catcher. He's gotten some reps at first base, but that's not part of the conversation at all. Like, if they make a move at first base this season, it'll be for Wilmer Flores. So, and I don't think they will. I mean, I have full faith in Belt having another good year, but I just don't think that's part of the conversation. And then, you know, the other thing people have to remember, like he really, really struggled when he got called up last year, and they're going to make sure that he goes to AAA, which the season doesn't even start for another couple weeks, and goes there and tears it up, not just for 2 weeks, but maybe for 2 months. So this is going to be a while. And I think for Ramos too, I mean, he's done everything right since he showed up in Scottsdale, and he continues to maybe be one of the best players, if not the best player, over there at the alternate site. But he is a guy who barely has played in Double A, and they do not want him to have the same thing happen that happened to Joey last year, which is just, it's different at the big league level. And it's different when you know, it's one thing to tear up spring training, but a lot of those hits, and this is not a knock on Elliott at all, but a lot of those hits are coming late in games against guys who are not going to be on big league rosters, who you're not going to see this year. It's much different when you step in there against Trevor Bauer and Clayton Kershaw, and they want him to be able to come here and do that and succeed and stay. So I think we're talking, you know, for me, July until we see some of these kids at the earliest, at the very earliest, and they're just going to be really careful not to rush them.
Alex Pavlovich here on 95.7 The Game. Let's wrap up with this. Like you said, the price of poker goes up when the competition gets better, and the competition's getting better with the Cincinnati Reds coming to town. They got barrels, man. The Reds got a lot of barrels in that lineup. They lead baseball in team average, tied for the most home runs. They got the most RBIs and the third most hits in all of baseball. So we really got a challenger coming in here after a watered-down San Diego product was sandwiched around the Mariners and the Rockies. So are you going to put a little bit more stock in what we see over the next three games than you have over the first nine?
I'm so glad you introduced it that way, because they did beat the Padres, but I've heard from so many people the last couple of days who are like, this team, you know, stop talking about the Mariners and the Rockies. They beat the Padres too. Well, yeah, they didn't really beat the full Padres. So they haven't seen a team like they're going to, a lineup like they're going to see with the Reds over the next three games. And I think it's going to tell us a lot about this starting staff, starting with tonight with Sanchez. But these guys have been a lot better than we expected. They've been a lot better than I had expected. They've gone deeper in the games. They've been more productive than I expected. I thought that was going to be their biggest issue the entire season, was starting pitching. And they haven't really been tested yet, just because that Padres team was missing three or four key guys. So this is going to be a really fun test starting tonight. And I think we will know a lot about them on Thursday as they head on their first road trip. Because if they can pitch their way through this series, it starts to get a little bit interesting.
Thank you so much, Alex. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Alex Pavlovich, NBC Bay Area. He covers the Giants. It's always good to have him on here. And, yeah, Wade Miley against Aaron Sanchez tonight. And if Boach were still here, he would say pitching tonight is Sanchi. Thank you very much. Alex Pavlovich. I didn't even know he was still up there. I thought we already hung up. Look at him. He even adds a little laugh on the way out. That's why he's a great guest. Whenever you can make the host feel like his joke landed, that's a good guest. Alex Pavlovich here on 95.7 The Game. We are going to open
a pack. If I can critique briefly, I think your grumble is better than your Sanchi. That's really, I mean, that is an elite grumble.
Right.
He competes.
Thank you. sorry, let me get the Bochy out of my throat to let you know that we're opening up a Top Shot pack on the other side of this break. We're so excited. Kolsky has invaded our own computers. We will be able to see his laptop on our Zoom meeting. So what's that do for you, good listener, in your car or at home on the radio right now? It does nothing for you, but we will try to explain it to the very best of our abilities. Our astute eyes are all over Kolsky's own laptop. By the way, I'm looking for any embarrassing open tabs in his internet browser, and I see none, which is very, very disappointing. I'd hope we would get a little something up there that we weren't supposed to see. I wanted to see horrific things. No horrific things. We are brought to you by our good friends at Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromise. Our Exergen temperature check right now here on 95.7 The Game. We have in the Bay Area, oh yeah, it is mostly cloudy and 63 degrees in beautiful downtown Oakland.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome to the multimedia event of the year. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. I can see that like us, like me anyways, you are a Firefox web browser user. We're about to open a pack of...
It's Google Chrome. It's
Google Chrome, baby. All right, yeah. Google Chrome. Let's do it for real. We're about to open a pre-ordered pack of Top Shot cards that Matt Kolsky purchased for $9, and we're about to see what the hell happens when you step with both feet directly into the future. Okay, so talk the old men co-host through this, Matt. What are Ray and I about to see? You have done this before. How did you get here? Walk us up to this moment that we are about to just drown in.
All right, so basically, and I'll show you on my screen here, I've got a collection of moments. There's 13 moments in my collection. They include such illustrious moments as Steph Curry handles. I got a really good Kelly Oubre dunk in here somewhere. If I can find that one, I'll show it to you. There it is. We got Kelly Oubre, and he's playing the Spurs, and it's a tip dunk, or I'm sorry, the Nets, and it's all over Kevin Durant's head. Boom. One-handed tip dunk on Kevin Durant's head. So that's my Kelly Oubre moment. And
it just, you it's can playing buy... on a, it's, I'm sorry, but it's playing on a loop like a GIF or GIF would. I still don't even know how you pronounce that, much less Top Shot. But it basically,
yeah, it plays
on
a couple
really,
times.
Yeah, on a small loop.
Well, you see a few versions of it, right? So there's one angle. There's another angle. And then I think we get one more angle. And then it shows you, here's the game it came from. And, you know, if I scroll down on my little page here, it'll tell me what Kelly Oubre did in that game. It'll tell me the final score of that game. I got some stats on Kelly Oubre here. Anyway, that's what a moment looks like in my collection.
Okay.
Those moments come from two places, basically. You could go on the marketplace and you can go buy them, and that's just like an eBay for Top Shot cards, right? It's contained in here. So everyone who wants to sell a Top Shot card goes to the marketplace. Anyone who wants to buy an individual Top Shot card from another collector goes to the marketplace. The other place you get cards is from packs, and packs are sort of dropped at random. For some of them, there are certain conditions, like you have to have a certain level of collection, you have to have been involved with Top Shot for a certain amount of time, what have you. Like today, there was a super exciting pack drop that I was not eligible to be a part of, right?
Your access to packs depends on your own website status.
Yeah, some packs.
Okay.
This pack was a pre-order pack, which basically is, as many of you want to pre-order a pack, you could pre-order it. We'll create that many packs for everybody, and then you'll get it sort of in the mail later. And there are other pack drops that, you know, everybody or different groups are eligible for that just drop at a certain time, and you sort of hop in a line, and you get randomized. It's sort of a lottery for the order, and the first however many people get that pack, right? So I've gotten one or two of those, and that's how I've built up my collection, in addition to buying a couple that I thought were interesting.
Okay.
And so what I have here is a pre-order pack that I've been waiting to open with you guys.
Ray, are you caught up? Are you up to speed? Do you have any questions up to this point?
Yes. Do you feel like you're 26 again?
I do, and it's great. Can you see it, Ray? Can you see the base pre-order pack I've got here on my screen?
I'm looking right at it. Yeah, it's mostly black.
Yep. It is black. The packaging of the pack is black. You can see it's a common pack here from the base set, Series 2, Release 24. And I'm ready when you guys are.
do it. So you're going to click the word open and let's see what happens. Can I do play-by-play as it opens, or would you like to do play-by-play? Okay, I'm going to do play-by-play. Click down to your open in 3, 2, 1, and then click.
Okay. 3, 2, and 1.
The top
shot. And now
shot
I have to
pack.
Open again.
Okay, so it's shaking.
The pack. Here we go.
The top shot it's pack shaking. Is shaking a little bit. It looks like a condom is about to be opened. And sure enough, pre-order base set series 2 release 24. We have 3 click and reveals. So there will be 3 total top shot cards revealed to us here in this pack. Click number 1. It is a dunk. It is the Josh Hart dunk from February 21st in the New Orleans Pelicans. It's a fire pack, folks. Yeah.
Oh.
So look at that Josh Hart dunk.
Look at him hang on the rim there.
Oh, it's what the kids are here for. Yeah, it's a party. It's the Josh Hart dunk. What a night for Josh
Hart.
That's
a big one. It comes from a loss to the Sacramento Kings.
There you go.
And so, down here, I'm going to tell you another thing. So down here you see it's Josh Hart dunk, as you said, February 1st of 2021 in a loss to the Sacramento Kings. But down here where it says common number 17661 out of 35,000 plus, and then CC basically means they're continuing to make them. So 35,000 plus, there's a whole bunch of these Josh Hart cards. I have 17,661, which is to say nothing special about that serial number. But you might see if it said LE down here, that means it's a limited edition series that they have stopped creating that. So however many are there, that's how many there will ever be. And I have one of those numbers. So, all right, card number 2, here we go.
Click to reveal. Oh, my goodness, it's a layup, everybody. It is a LaMelo Ball layup, though.
LaMelo
Ball, very, very hot, spicy, as the kids would say these days. Oh, the whole studio's turning up celebrating this reveal of a Top Shot pack. Mm. Even Ray Ratto, I can see him dancing back in his home in Alameda. Very, very excited about the prospects of LaMelo Ball being revealed here, a December 26th. Ooh, just the day after Christmas. It is a common pack card. However, we have 2 dots saying that this was a play that was minted during the rookie season. And yes, indeed, mm-hmm. It is from his rookie season. Okay.
So that would be like akin to when you opened your baseball pack and you would get a rookie card, right? And like, I remember Donruss used to have the rated rookies. You remember those?
Yes.
So I think that's sort of that's sort of an analog to that. All right, card number 3. Here we go.
Click to reveal. It's a dunk from February 1st. The Anthony Davis dunk, Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah, look at that. Nice little pass from LeBron into the post. Davis throws it down, embarrassing the Atlanta Hawks. So there you go. I'll tell you this, for a random Top Shot 3-pack set here, you got 2 bona fide NBA marquee players in Anthony Davis and LaMelo Ball, with all due respect to Josh Hart. Not exactly a headliner out there. Wow. Let me tell you,
this
Top Shot is it's where the future is, baby. I've absolutely
honestly,
no idea what the hell I just looked at.
For a random base set pack, I feel really good about exactly what you said, getting LaMelo Ball. I mean, just as an example, the lowest price you can find that LaMelo Ball for on the marketplace right now is $53. So even if you figure just that card, a $9 pack was a heck of an investment.
So you are already up. Hold on. We're going to have to get the calculator out here because we want all. You're up $44.
Yeah. If I wanted to sell just that card right now, I could almost certainly make $44 in profit, which is not bad. The Anthony Davis, and again, I'm just going by the lowest price that one of those cards has sold on the marketplace. That one, the lowest price it sold for, the Anthony Davis, is $12. So even if I sold that one, which again, it's not much, that's more than I paid for the pack. Now, what happens to these prices over time is the real question, because I'm not going to sell it today.
Also, LeBron is the one passing AD the ball on a little slip screen there, and he's the one who dunked it.
Right.
So.
It's unclear how much value that has. A lot of these things, like, it's still being
established what has value in the marketplace. So, you know, it's sort of up in the air.
Ray, what is your impression of this glorious, unprecedented show moment where we watch Matt Kolsky get $44 richer at the very least?
I think this is something that should be enjoyed in the privacy of one's own home. So that the thrills really are
you're
more...
You're here with me, Ray. You're in my home.
That's so horrifying, I can't even begin to verbalize it. I hope you make a crapload of money on this.
Thanks, buddy.
But not because this is interesting to me.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll just stop sharing my screen then. Fine.
No,
wow.
I'm just saying, you know, two dunks and a layup. I mean, there's about 300 of them in the course of a regular NBA night.
I still don't understand.
But I want you to be happy. And if this brings you joy, then you should continue to do it.
Appreciate that.
My only hesitation, though, is that while you were showing us these things, Lucas was having an epileptic fit back in the office, and I don't want to be subjected to that again.
See, Ray, the way you say that you want me to be happy, Lucas and Nash actually enjoy my happiness. So that was just them enjoying my happiness.
I didn't enjoy Lucas's happiness.
But they should have done it without subjecting me to
it. Yeah, I might need to borrow that $44. I might have broken some things back here.
I still don't understand, like, what you do. So now that you've got these three cards, like, at night when you're up and alone and in your, you know, the place where you go to contemplate things, do you look at these cards? Do you, like, pour through them? Like, will you click on the LaMelo Ball card and just watch it three or four different times tonight? Like, happy to have it? Is there an element of, ooh, I'm going to go watch this again to you at all about any of this?
Not especially, but I do think there's some appeal to, like, if you had a collection. I mean, in the same way that I remember putting baseball cards in, like, those sort of three-ring binders in the plastic sleeves and then, like, flipping through them every once in a while.
Right.
Like, I could see going back to be like, oh, man, that I forgot. That was a cool moment. And, you know, every so often here or there, that's not a totally foreign or insane concept to me. But mostly what interests me is following the action of the marketplace and following the action of pack drops and just how many more people seem to be catching on to this trend. Because in my mind, as long as more and more people are being drawn in, you know, I am not yet at risk of all of these cards' values dropping to zero suddenly and being, you know, stuck with $300 down the drain or whatever it ends up being.
And on that note, welcome everyone to your 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 in San Francisco. It's an Odyssey station.
Again, when you have all the top shot it takes to retire, we will wish you the very, very best and tip our cap to you. And you can say, hey, we saw it here happen for the very first time. And I just
did.
I've never seen Top Shot cards or packs actually opened. It's really not the feast for the senses that I. It's just
there's
kind of
music.
A,
if we had had the audio running, there is music. But
well, we
it's
had
not,
our, like our own
no
music that I think was pretty exciting.
We did.
That was really.
Agreed.
I think it sent a sense of excitement here on the air. There
Thank
you go.
You. Yeah.
So like tonight, Steph Curry is likely to score 19 points to pass Wilt Chamberlain, and the 19th version of that Top Shot, will that be worth more than serial number 18 or 31? You would think maybe. Who gets to decide what serial numbers have more value? Is it just the player's jersey? Is it just a corresponding numerological phenomena? What?
Well, it's the market, really. I mean, that's what's so interesting about this is the, you know, all those prices that I was quoting you about the lowest price that any serial number of that card has sold for, that's just me reporting data from the Top Shot marketplace. And, you know, if people decide, I mean, it really is just what do people decide is worth more? And so far, people have definitely decided that the player's jersey number as a serial number is worth a lot. And also that the you know, the number one is worth a lot, which of course makes sense on a certain
sure.
level. And sort of what else ends up being worth what is still up for debate, or if not debate, like the market to set those standards.
Top Shot. Ray, are you going to run upstairs and tell the wife that you finally saw a Top Shot and you're ready to talk about it now?
I think that's something I'll probably keep to myself.
Fair enough. Don't want to go spreading your Top Shot,
well,
you know, arrogance
are you
around.
Are you running to your wife and going to tell her the same thing?
It's as soon as I get off the air. Honey, Matt Kolsky showed me his Top Shot. Let me tell you all about it. That LaMelo Ball
yeah,
one.
Baby.
Let me tell you, honey, hey, we got to get into this.
For the people out there who want to see my Top Shot, apparently our social team is working on getting it posted soon, very soon.
Put it on Twitch, baby. The kids are going to love it. I don't even know what that means, by
and,
the way. So.
And you get to see Ray's incredible, enthusiastic
reactions?
Reaction. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll
nice.
Probably be out tomorrow, so keep an eye on our Twitter page, at 957 the game, at DRK957.
Lucas, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I really do hate you.
Good times.
You have Thanks, you Ray. Have mentioned that. I remember you mentioning that.
Love
that
you
has
too,
been
Ray.
Brought up on the show in the past. There's no doubt about it. Steph Curry right now is on the greatest scoring run of his career. Over his last six games, he's been averaging 36 points. He needs to keep that up tonight if the Warriors are going to have any kind of a puncher's chance in this one against the Denver Nuggets, who are obviously coming to town with a bona fide MVP candidate. Meanwhile, Curry's team isn't getting the results that are tantamount with MVP consideration. But as an individual performer, this guy has just been unbelievable. Since he missed those five games in a row after bruising his tailbone in Houston, he scored 32. Then he comes back with 36 against the Hornets. No, he has 32 against the Hornets, then 36 against the Heat. He sits out that back-to-back because they just sat him for the back-to-back, and that's the game that they lose to Toronto by 53. So Curry's the MVP when you add him, and he's argument is even made for him almost when you subtract him. And I'm not here saying that Steph Curry is the MVP of the entire NBA, but for the Warriors, my God, 37, 41, 32, and 38 in his last four games, 19 points to pass Wilt Chamberlain as the franchise's all-time leading scorer. Again, very likely to happen tonight, gentlemen, before halftime. Unless the Nets are going to run box and one or triple team them for the entire night, which if you're the Nets, you probably should, because I don't think Kelly Oubre's going. The Nuggets, excuse me. Kelly Oubre, I don't know if he's going. And James Wiseman, obviously, is a hold your breath, don't expect to see him for the rest of the year proposition as it stands right now.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the bare bones world's smallest NBA team for a while. And you should find some joy in that, because it's not like they have an option. So if you're gonna do this, do it with a good attitude, because there'll be plenty of times when you'll feel lousy about it. And tonight might be one of those nights, because I think, like Damon said earlier, Jokic is going to go for 84.
And Kelly Oubre is officially out tonight, so there you go.
Yeah, look, there.
I'm sorry, 86.
Even with Oubre doesn't help him against Jokic. Even with Oubre, they've got issues in the size department, most notably. But here's the thing. There is joy in that. You know, Damon, you said find some joy in that. Like, this might be the most joyful version of the Warriors. With Wiseman out there, as much as I want him out there getting the experience, it's been a real roller coaster ride, and it hasn't always been joyful. Juan Toscano-Anderson may not be the guy you want playing 20 minutes a night at the NBA 5. But I'll tell you what, he's fun to watch. He moves the ball. He does things that help you win. So I'm not so sure this won't be kind of a fun, fast little version of the Warriors. And I kind of still think they're going to be in one of those play-in games, at least.
Well, you know, we'll all find out. I do know that there's
two things going for you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you have two things going for you. New Orleans and Sacramento can't win to save their lives.
You do have that going for you. And I look at the Warriors right now, and there is just one way for it to really be a catastrophe, and that was to miss the playoffs and not develop James Wiseman. Now, one of those seems to be done with. And if it's James Wiseman, the last thing you can do, all right, so make the playoffs then. Or would it be better to now miss? I don't know, and that's where we get back to the joy. And Curry, you just go ahead and you put your signature all over these games. And if that's enough to get you into the win column, God bless. It's just amazing what they've been through, though. I started going back like through the years, just the toll of the injuries that almost feel like the Warriors are an NFL team. Like, basketball teams don't get hurt like this. They don't. Historically, go through it. Yeah, that's a bad injury, or that's the night where Magic pulled his hammy, and that was big because it happened in the finals. But it's not like Worthy then also went down, and then A.J. Green went down, and then, you know, Pat Riley decided, my back's out, I can't coach 24. I mean, it's insane. This isn't even, like, we can even throw in Steve Kerr into the who hasn't been here for all of it, and that would count. But when you think about it, it's got to be the most critically injured NBA team of my lifetime. It starts, obviously, and I really mean this. I don't think a lot of people would cite this as a starting point. To me, it is. Bogut's knee injury. Bogut's knee injury in Game 5 of the 2016 NBA Finals had as much to do with Cleveland's comeback as Draymond's suspension in my mind. That injury cost them an NBA Finals and all the 3-1 jokes that you can be thrown at you in your lifetime. Then, of course, you have the KD injury that cost him a realistic shot at a title. And then you have Klay Thompson's ACL injury, which cost the Warriors their chance to force a miracle Game 7 in Toronto, which, again, there goes another title. And a chance to compete really goes by the wayside there because KD's on his way out of town, so it's going to be Steph Curry going one-man band basically next year until it wasn't. Because Curry's wrist lasts 5 games before Chase Center basically picked the wrong year to open for a couple of different reasons. And so now you go from 5 straight trips to the NBA Finals down to 15 wins. And the pick that you get for suffering through all of that, James Wiseman now has a knee injury to halt his rookie season. And that pick gets made on the same day that Klay Thompson tears his Achilles, which now costs him back-to-back NBA seasons in the prime of his career. So just to recap, again, you got Bogut knee, KD Achilles, Klay ACL, Curry wrist, Klay Achilles, Wiseman knee, and you basically got catastrophic injuries happening to a former number one overall pick, a Hall of Fame scorer in the NBA Finals, a catastrophic injury to a beloved future Hall of Fame two guard, a broken wrist to the most important player in franchise history, a season-ending, again, Hall of Fame injury to your future Hall of Fame shooting guard. You got the second overall pick in the NBA draft now hurt for the remainder of his rookie year. Like, am I missing anything? And the answer is, yes, I'm missing things. Like, what about DeMarcus Cousins' torn quad? Like, you weren't even thinking about that, but that happened too. What about all those games in that Houston series where it looked like Andre Iguodala wasn't going to go? That almost happened too. What about Marquise Chris's broken leg? Yeah, that happened too. I mean, it is ridiculous how hurt with big injuries this team has been.
Rub some dirt on it, walk it off.
Look, you can't. Not these. These aren't those types of injuries. These are the big ones. Serious ones over and over.
I will say this, the difference, you know, because other teams have as many injuries, if not more. But I think you could say the Durant injury, the Curry injury, the two Thompson injuries, those are injuries you don't get to come back from. You know, whether it means you don't get to win a championship or your season flushes itself down the toilet or you become a fringe playoff team. You don't get to challenge for championships, you know, otherwise. And you just sort of, you know, you have to take the 5 years when you were the most fun team in basketball and you have to measure it against the, you know, the last 2.5 years of, ugh, you know, and you just do it because you don't get a choice. I don't feel bad for him at all. I'm a fatalist that way.
I feel bad for him. I feel bad mostly for the guys who are injured,
but also for the organization that, you know, they've been criticized for rightly or wrongly for a variety of moves. But for me, the overwhelming thing is we'll never know if some of these moves were right because the team was never complete. The two seasons now of an incomplete team dating back into the 2019 finals when, you know, two of your most important players weren't there. And I don't think other teams are this injured or worse. Whether we're talking about the major players going down or just the number of nicks and bruises they've dealt with. I mean, in addition to Curry and Thompson and Durant in 2019, it's been, you know, nicks for Eric Paschal and Marquise Chris misses the season and Looney missing time and, you know, Steph even this year missing time and Draymond with the thumb and the ankle and just like nonstop. And I don't think it's normal.
It's
It's an extraordinary run of bad luck. And I, you know, I don't think any of us really believe it has anything to do with winning three titles in 5 years and going to the finals all those years, other than maybe the wear and tear that put on some guys. But like, it's not a karma thing or anything like that. It's just bad luck. And it sucks.
You say you don't feel bad for the team. Ray, I'll meet you there. You know, millionaires, people who've got six-car garages and thread counts and jacuzzis and infinity pools, they don't garner an awful lot of sympathy from anybody. You know who I do feel bad for, though? Me. The sports fan who got the ringside front row seat to one of the greatest stories he's ever going to be able to cover in his entire life, and it ends early with all this stupid nonsense, then keeping going on. I mean, like, this is a moment in time where we're watching Hall of Fame generational-level players have key years from their primes taken from them, man. I mean, it's brutal to take any 2 years from an NBA career is rough. To take these 2 years away from Klay Thompson is downright basketball evil. I mean, it really is. These are his salad days, if you will. Like, remember, those five straight trips to the NBA Finals, all of that was too much too soon. It really was. Like, the first three NBA Finals appearances were like, you're playing with house money almost. Like, now's when they're really supposed to be in that groove of going back. And it just stinks. It really, really just, it stinks. And, you know, someone's saying that Kuzma tweeted out karma. Okay.
That's,
you know,
not, why, how is that karma?
Yeah,
that part doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, this isn't karma. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't tempt fates. They were wildly successful.
Even knows what karma means. Like, are we really? That's not something, if that's a Warrior fan in the text bringing that up, it's not something we need to react to.
Well, he did spell it with a C, so no, I'm just kidding.
No,
Jamal
Murray,
like, seriously, apparently. I don't think he knows what he's talking about. Kyle Kuzma, who cares?
Jamal Murray's going to be a game time decision. So there you go. There's the door of hope for the Warriors tonight cracking open just a little bit. That or Curry's got to go for 55. I mean, it really is. I know that we've been talking a little bit about me wanting more Curry, his usage percentage to go up, more Curry. Shoot it a little bit more. If you're shooting 20 times a game, now shoot it 30 times a game. Look, I don't know. There's nothing left but that. That just, Steph Curry, put it up from anywhere. And if you were thinking about not putting it up, you're thinking wrong. Take that shot. Take the shot even if you don't want to take the shot. Who's out there to help you? Wiggins, sure. Be a little bit helpful. That's where it ends. I don't know if you can count on anybody. Maybe Jordan Poole. Maybe. Who, by the way, without Oubre playing tonight, is Poole getting a start? Is that the move you go in?
Yeah, for me, yes. Andrew Wiggins effectively moves to the three. Looney's at center, and that's what I would go with.
Do we get a Nico Mannion reappearance? He's got to be back in the mix, right? I mean, there's 28 minutes. Somebody's got to play tonight, right?
The fact that he has not sort of reemerged in the rotation after that one stretch where Kerr was playing him with Poole a lot leads me to believe they don't really think he's ready. So I wouldn't be surprised if we just see more Juan, more Damian Lee, more Kent Bazemore, as opposed to a reemergence of Nico Mannion.
And by the way, isn't that where some of this team's developmental criticism comes from? Like, we're declaring this kid, he's going to be playing the rest of the year. They get, you know, 4 or 5 small game sample sizes of returns they're not necessarily in love with. So then just ripcord out that plan. It's gone, and it's back to DNP's coach decision. Like, this is why people laugh at some of the Warriors' development. And you can say, look, man, he's a second-round pick. Let's all take a breath. But there's a pattern of, yeah, we're going to commit to the kid. Ah, we didn't like what we saw. We're going to call that commitment off now. We're not going to do that anymore. Like, it is a little herky-jerky, it feels like, with guys, how they get pulled into the lineup, and then how they get pulled out of it as well.
Is it possible that it just feels like that because we haven't actually seen this team have to play young players in, like, a decade? Like, I think it's somewhat normal, especially with 19 and 20-year-olds, especially with a second-round pick, to go through some of that. But beyond that, I also think there may have been a conversation with Steph Curry at some point. Somewhere between the decision to play Nico Mannion for 15 minutes a night and the decision to really do everything they can to make sure they maintain a hold on the play-in spot, where I think Nico Mannion's minutes are now going to Jordan Poole and Kent Bazemore. And that definitely gives them a better chance of getting into the play-in. I mean, on night to night, Nico Mannion is not as good as those veterans.
You're right. But I would rather see what Mannion has than what Bazemore's got left. I really do. And I know that we're
I'm
kind of on the opposite side to the Bazemore argument, but you know what I mean.
Well, but it's not even that. I mean, I'm with you on the youth part of that, right? I mean, whatever we think of Bazemore, we may have differing views of Bazemore as a player, but, you know, the future of this team depends zero on Kent Bazemore, and, you know, Nico Mannion could at least be a part of that. So I'm with you. I'd rather see Bazemore. If I'm trying to figure out why the Warriors have gone away from Mannion, I do think that trying to win games has to do with it.
And if that is the case, again, Stephen Curry's wishes supersede a lot of things just because they should. You know, I mean, does Stephen Curry become disillusioned with being a Warrior in some case because of Nico Mannion playing too much? Well, then Nico Mannion doesn't get to play as much. I don't think that's how the thought process works. I think they want to try to win every game because Stephen Curry wants to get into the playoffs, if at all possible. He doesn't want to watch May and June and parts of July again. And if Nico Mannion's development is slowed a bit because of that, I'm untroubled by it. That's just how I view this situation.
19 points to pass Wilt Chamberlain. I'm guessing that's kind of a, I don't know if you stop the game to honor it, but that is obviously going to be a big part of tonight's broadcast for sure. The guy who was a big part of the last broadcast that we saw, the Aaron Showtime Taylor, was a nice little story to sprinkle into the air, but there's one way that the Warriors kind of got that wrong. The guy that they asked to come in and do the PA, who had come from San Quentin, just got out of prison. This is his shot on a microphone. Seems like a guy who's absolutely deserving a second shot. And let me just say that your PA announcer, you should have had a little pee in there for him first. They should have waited till the public was back in before they brought that guy out. Aaron Taylor did a nice job with the player introductions, but he's introducing the players to themselves. Like, why wouldn't you tell him, be like, hey man, instead of having you do it this night, in like 3 more games, we're going to be able to let 35% of the fans back in here. Come up and do it that night. That's the night the Warriors should have had this guest PA announcer.
Yeah, if you're going to look, the whole idea behind that was to let fans enjoy it as well as him. But I mean, there's so much of the showmanship in games where there's nobody there. that literally makes no sense to me at all. Why are you bothering? Nobody's there to enjoy it. So
well,
don't
do
it.
It's a TV show.
Screw that. You know what? You're not getting to see most of that anyway.
Yeah,
you know, because they have people in the studio who have to yammer endlessly, like Bonte. We don't want it. We don't want Bonte to have less TV time because we're showing something that's happening out, you know, before an empty crowd. It's just, you know, it's like having Red Panda work in a closet. Why would you do that?
Thank you for bringing Red Panda into today's show. I'm glad she made an appearance, but it really is odd. They still have like in arena evacuation announcements, like before the game gets underway. Like if there's an earthquake, all fans can leave here, 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 and here. There's no fans. I mean, I guess you're telling the media people in there, everyone else how to get in there. But like they'll have a timeout and they'll still do like their goofy, like timeout video gag, or like they'll still
yeah,
be. I see Steve. He just thanked. I think Janie McCulley just won some sort of a Hall of Fame award, and he does this big thing that you would, hey, in front of a sold out crowd. What a nice gesture that the Warriors are congratulating her on this career achievement in front of the entire crowd. But without the crowd there, what's really kind of the point of the gesture?
Two things. I think it's all on League Pass for whatever that's worth. And second of all, I think part of it is just to maintain a sense of normalcy for the players.
Yeah, maybe. It's like one of those, like, we're going to want you to do this, and if we let you out of it now, you'll never be able to do it again.
Right.
So we're just going to keep on asking. It's like spend every single penny in your budget or it goes away the next year. I maybe that's it. We got to go. We have spent all the pennies in our budget for today's show. If you'd like to put more pennies in your budget, text the code word OBJECT to 72881. OBJECT to 72881. A multi-state contest. Message and data rates apply. Brought to you by Osh.com. We are also brought to you by Network Capital Funding. Stay tuned, because Warriors Live is coming up next. We'll be back for a full four-hour show tomorrow, and then the rest of the week gets a little choppy with the Warriors out on the road and funny start time. So we'll tell you what's happening all week as we get into it. In the meantime, thank you very much to Mark Spears and Alex Pavlovich, and to Matt Kolsky's Top Shop account for appearing on today's show. For Matt, for the boys in the studio, for Ray, I'm Damon. Thank you very much for listening. And remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that,